Akron, Ohio. This is episode 209 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking court romantics and then our top five favorite court romantics. As always, I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
Eva.
And Kyle.
Sir, court romantics was your idea. What's going on in the news that might have brought that up?
Man. Well, today there's some kind of like sporting event happening.
It's not that. Super Bowl.
Bull riding.
We did that, yeah.
It's the Kansas City Chiefs versus the San Francisco 49ers. Did I do it?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got it.
A lot of racism on display on television right now. Kansas City Chiefs. Man.
Whew. Do people have as much issue with that team as they do with the Indians?
Somehow, no.
Not as much.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Because the Indians logo is a Sambo.
Yeah, exactly.
Not anymore.
That is true. They did change it.
It is just the letter C.
Yeah.
That's not going to stop anybody in the crowd.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. But you can't be like, can't.
No, I went to a number of games last year, and it most certainly does not.
No. I think that is some of it for the Chiefs, is they did not have as many of the obvious signifiers as like the Braves or the Redskins.
Yeah, the Redskins is like the worst name because it's a literal racial slur.
Yeah.
Whereas the Indians had the worst logo.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the state of Ohio.
This is not going to be fun at all, is it?
No. But it's one of those things that I know nobody else at the table does because of jobs that I used to have. The state of Ohio schools, from like elementary schools all the way through colleges, has more Native American themed mascots than any other state.
There's one right down the street.
We did it.
Was it Revere?
Copley.
Yeah, Copley. Revere is the Minutemen.
Yep.
Named after the 80s punk band? Was that?
Certainly.
No, I'm thinking of the Milkmen.
I want to say the...
No, the Minutemen was Mike Watt.
Didn't East used to be the East Orientals or something?
Oh, jeez.
Really?
I think so.
All right, I got to find one of their shirts and wear it. Also, you know what I've tried to find that I don't think they make, but especially in my size, a Wobble shirt. The West Akron Baseball League, like one of their t-shirts.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Find who used to screen print them and they'll make you a new one. We used to do that all the time. We used to pull like the really old logos and just make ourselves.
That's awesome.
I made my friend a really cool Kent State shirt back when the Golden Flashes was actually like a character that looked like a luchador kind of, but like bigger and lumpier. And I pulled that out of a box and made him a shirt. He was really happy.
Nice.
But that was before that t-shirt company that does that for their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. The courtroom.
I guess there was some, you know,
some news,
some stuff going on the news.
Current events.
Yeah,
by the time this gets, this is going to get released the end of the week, Wednesdays, I think.
So yeah,
this will all wrap up.
Well, we'll just get right to it. At that point, they'll be wrapping up what's undoubtedly the greatest sham trial this country's ever seen.
Yep.
I mean, apparently there's a guy who threatened an ambassador, who invited a foreign government to operate in our elections. What else is like really clear? Obstructed justice, tried to obstruct the Congress. And he's on trial, went on trial, no witnesses. I thought it was a black trial. I'm like, this is like a Bloomberg trial from the Stop and Frisk era. Like, they're just railroading him through.
It's not great.
It was rough. And I was one of the unfortunates that like for some reason watched the whole thing. And wow, it was a sad day. It was kind of cool though to see like how like the oratory was nice. Everybody was really conscious of the fact that this is going down in history and that they're getting recorded as such. So they tried to get their flowery speeches in. Did you guys watch any of it?
Nope. I did not, because I knew where I was going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to keep eating candy. That's what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks.
So, did you see, while you were watching, did you see any of these courtroom antics? Let me list some of the typical courtroom antics as outlined by TV Tropes. There's accuse the witness. Did you see any of accusing the witness?
Nope. No witnesses.
No witnesses.
Did you see disregard that statement?
Nope, no witnesses to give
statements. You know what? There was a disregard that statement moment when Rand Paul tried to get a question read
that named
the alleged whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
And Chief Justice John Roberts was just like, no.
Nope, we're not doing that.
So then Rand Paul left. He wasn't even allowed to leave the chamber. So he leaves the chamber and holds a press conference immediately in what's been called the greatest political stunt of the trial. So,
did you... So, I think we've already covered make the dog testify. That would have been a witness. Surprise witness. Surprise, there were no witnesses. That was objectionable. I guess that's... did anyone say, I object?
There was that dude that started screaming when Jeffries was talking. Yeah,
a guy did have an outburst that was tracked as one of our listeners actually told me what it was. And I'd have to look at my phone to see. We're not going to admit it. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the guy yelled, like, Jesus Christ, they're trying to overturn the election. Chuck Schumer is the devil. And, you know,
that's some good old fashioned anti-Semitism right there.
Absolutely. Bark, bark, bark.
Right.
Racism watchdog. The
racism watchdog.
Bark, bark, bark. Like, I was so close to just like, oh, wow. I thought we were going to hear cultural Marxism from Fox News or some shit like that. But
there's still time.
There's still time.
We still got a couple days.
Yeah.
This party ain't over.
So it wasn't very fun. There wasn't any of this typical...
No, it wasn't very funny at all.
It was kind of fun to watch late at night just to see how unhinged people who are accustomed to only having to be on TV for an hour or two a day now have to, like...
Yeah, like Brian Williams was really coming apart there.
Yeah, especially like the other day after the vote about witnesses. He was just really... It's getting to him. Having to work 40 hours a week is really starting to wear on.
Yeah, you could tell like a lot of them were like, you know, their hair is like messed up, wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
It's like election day over and over and over again.
Yeah, God. So we've talked about real life. What about in like TVs, movies, stuff like that? How do these court romantics typically play out?
I think that the court, and I have been thinking a lot about this since this trial. The trial as like a cultural moment in American like life and like in our myths and our folklore is like a big deal.
Yeah.
This is the idea of like,
and when they happen in real life, they become pretty popular.
Yeah.
Like the OJ trial was,
oh man, it's the biggest.
Yeah.
And just this idea that like there should be this, I mean, it's a sense of fairness, like it's, or it's a hope. It's almost like a hope for fairness that I don't know that we've ever actually really, really achieved yet. There's this like kind of lofty goal that there's this moment where you get to speak
gonna be
for
okay.
yourself, right? You get to kind of like have your moment to say who you are. And let's consider this really sacred thing, kind of like our democracy.
That came up in, it's actually one of the things that I picked for documentary. And then as I was doing it, I realized I could have used it here too, where a person says in a court, she stands up and she says, you know, that this could have been, you know, that the court, the laws aren't made for her and the court isn't made from her. And this could have been a chance for her to come down and be able to say what happened to her and what she saw. And she'll never have that in the courtroom because they're not there for her. That it's never going to be a system that's going to be fair to her. And this is a system that's made to benefit other people. And so she says, so it almost doesn't matter that I was here or not.
Well, since this is a different episode, do you want to say what that's from?
Oh, that's from Harlan County, USA.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a woman who was, she was picketing and she was attacked by a scab worker who got a nightstick away from somebody and then started beating her with it. And she naturally got arrested. And this was a hearing of, for her.
Yeah, I thought about, I did think about that movie, because you were, and then in that moment, thinking like, I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird is like one of our like biggest stories in like literature.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that too. How, I mean, I think Atticus was named maybe the best hero of film history when AFI did their like heroes and villains list. I can look up to see where he was, but I know he was on there, and it's, I'll pull it up right now. Yeah, he was number one. He was the number one hero.
There's like this interesting dynamic of the lawyer or like the advocate being this figure that's like standing in the breach against this, all, this powerful state, right. for one person, to like stick up for one person who has no power mm-hmm. against, you know, this kind of all powerful conglomerate, which I guess like before the advent, before we ended monarchies, there wasn't really anything like that. Like, that is one thing, that trials as we have them now are new phenomena for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, there's no similar story from medieval England, because they didn't have trials like that. Like, there was no, you were guilty if you like sank, or mm-hmm. if you lost a fight against a trained warrior, you know.
That's the thing, is I think that a lot of people in this country thought that this impeachment procedure was going to correct a lot of wrongs. You know, that it was wrong that he got elected, but you know, there's always this, well, maybe the Electoral College will fix it, or maybe this will fix it. And, oh, well, now we're going to get to, you know, now we have a Supreme Court justice and judges are impartial. They don't have political affiliations. And this judge is going to fix it for us. And we need to stop, I think, thinking that there's going to be another authority figure that we can find that's going to help us fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are people that we voted for, either directly or indirectly. We either actively supported them or we passively let them through. And every congressperson, every senator, every president, that's a true statement for them. And there was like the senator from Tennessee who said basically that there's been enough evidence mm-hmm. shown.
Lamar
Alexander. He says there's been enough. There's a different way to handle this. And it's frustrating for the situation that it's in. But yeah, also, like, they're not going to want to do any more work. It's up to us to think about how we want things to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, we're not going to see an authority figure check another one. We can't keep waiting for that.
Should we jump into the top fives?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
All right. Kyle, what is your number five courtroom antic?
I don't watch a lot of things or play games that...
Are there many courtroom games?
There are. There's one called something Ace Attorney. And basically, like, you're... It's very Japanese, like anime, and like his catchphrase is like, what is it? It's I object. So it's like big and flashy.
I accuse.
What he does, but yeah. So my list is quite diverse and weird. But yeah, my number five is just Liar Liar, and Jim Carrey being incredibly funny and goofy as a lawyer who can't lie. And I was rewatching certain scenes from that movie, and like when his opposition was asking like what his case is, and he can't lie, and he's just like goes full Jim Carrey, like faces and noises and things, and then when he beats himself up is incredible. But yeah, I would say that comedy doesn't show up a lot in courtrooms, and this was a good case for that.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think it's so great. I think it's one of his best. I liked how like that humor about like evil lawyers.
Yeah,
I feel like it was a much bigger deal when we were kids, that like lawyers were inherently liars, that they were inherently
evil. Well, I feel like when you're
embraced our oppressors in this
exactly
century.
Well, I feel like when you're a kid, you're also just like, the fact like, why does he need to lie so much? Like, you didn't know that like lawyers were like that. But yeah, it's really great. Yeah, we own one of his best roles, I'd say. Eva, would be your number five?
My number five is a Twilight Zone episode called Shadow Play. It's a man who has been convicted of murder and is being sentenced to die, and he's arguing for himself. He's doing the, you know, man representing himself, that this cannot be actually happening because he's dreaming. And he's using these like logical arguments to point out that this structure doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that he would have his trial and his execution on the same day. It doesn't make sense that people are playing different roles than they're supposed to. And it doesn't work.
Shocker.
<Yeah. laughs> So my number five is... I'm going to go with Who Shot Mr. Burns and stuff.
Sure.
My number five. Just because, like, it's one of the... like. especially as we open talking about this like public event that everybody's watching, even though not everybody is. Like, Who Shot Mr. Burns was one of the first TV events that I remember, like, going out in the neighborhood and people, like, talking about. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, like, who, which character do you think it was? And it was just such a funny and cool kind of example of how you can create an event like that on a show. And, like, I think that, like, I'm trying to remember who was the, Lionel Hutz is the attorney, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Phil Hartman voiced attorney.
Yeah. That's kind of like my phantom pick for this is just Lionel Hutz as a character, just because he's the greatest. Like when he's like, yeah, like he doesn't know law words.
Works like contingency? Money down.
And it's like, that's why you're the client and I'm the fancy law talking guy. Nick, what's your number five?
I'm going to go with Simpsons 1-2. It's kind of a movie within the show. It is from season 11, episode 1, called Beyond Blunderdome, in which Mel Gibson wants to remake Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah.
And he meets with Homer. And the two of them decide that what Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the instead of the long kind of filibuster scene that's very famous from that movie, Mel Gibson will instead just kill everyone.
And one person he kills with the American flag.
Yeah. He chucks it like a spear at him, and then it like goes through them, and then the flag like pops up and like starts blowing in the wind, and the studio execs are like,
isn't there a scene of him spinning around on the ground the way Homer does? He's like running.
Shooting him. Yeah, he like spins on the ground and then he does some like Three Stooges type stuff too. But my favorite part of this is the studio execs find it abhorrent, as they should.
Never happened that.
And Homer goes, "It was symbolism. He was mad," which is
like the. I mean, you can say it about a lot of movies now.
I have said it about a lot of movies, and specifically that one. Kyle, what is your number four?
My number four is the shootout that happens in Skyfall. Just because I think it's a really kind of crazy scene that happens when she has like this testimony or something, and she's like being really poetic about it. Meanwhile, Javier Bardem's character is like making his way to the courtroom and like being a badass and shooting up everybody. But like they keep cutting between like what he's doing and James Bond's trying to get to the courthouse. And then it turns out to be like this pretty cool shootout that happens in the courtroom. But yeah, I guess it's not really like traditional courtroom antics with like a real trial and everything.
But, I mean,
like, it's a thing that happens in the courtroom that's pretty memorable.
Hoffa's trial.
Yeah.
Because you charge with a gun, with a knife you run.
But yeah, it was just how the whole scene was edited was really cool, I thought. So that's my number four. What about you, Eva?
Going off of my number five, Shadow Play was one of the Twilight Zone episodes that was remade in the 1980s. And it had Peter Coyote in it. Peter Coyote was also in Jagged Edge, which is from 1985. It was written by Joe Esterhaas. And it has Glenn Close and Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges is accused of murdering his wife. And she is his defense attorney. And it falls into the trope of the defense attorney falling in love with the client and therefore being fully convinced of his innocence despite mounting evidence to the contrary. It has some really good surprise witness activity, like a witness who ends up confessing to a different murder, like on the stand, and like, you know, she's able to like basically like prod him into acting really aggressive with her to demonstrate that he isn't this like, you know, shiny nice person that he's acting like. And it's on one of the like over the air channels, the movie channels, like Movies or Escape or something. And I cannot not watch it. If I find if it's on, like, I have to watch the whole thing. It's totally pulpy, and exactly what you think is going to happen happens, and it doesn't matter. It's actually, I think it might be one of my favorite things that Joe Esterhaas has written, honestly, in terms of watchability repeatedly. It might be it. And it's really interesting to see Jeff Bridges play an all-out, like, bad character, which we don't really see him that way anymore.
Except in one of the Marvel movies. Isn't he a bad guy in one of the Marvel movies?
I can't think of which one, though. I know he is.
It's one of the Irons, man.
Iron Man. I think it's Iron Man 1.
Irons Man?
Yeah. That's what you call
it. It's like, Cole's the sack.
Yeah. Or Attorney's General.
First Iron Man. He's not a good guy.
Well, sir, it's not a great movie either, so.
Sir, what's your number four?
I don't know. I think my runner-up is Main Justice.
Nice.
Because, and the only reason it's not my number one pick is because I just thought of something else I want to talk about. And I think I've talked about Main Justice a lot. For those who don't know, it's the greatest sketch ever made, written by Jason Sudeikis, about,
it's well, a courtroom TV
main
drama.
Main Justice, right. And basically it's like these, it's riffing on the fact that Cajuns come from Maine.
Right.
Which is like a whole thing.
Something people don't know is that the Cajun culture in Louisiana is a group of people who are originally from Maine and that part of Canada.
Yeah, it used to be called Acadians. Yeah, it's a whole thing. You should look it up. It's a great sketch. My actual pick is 12 Angry Men. You just kind of made me think of it just because of how like formative of a film that was for me. I probably watched that movie, like, I watched it a lot as a kid. And I think the, like, the oratory, the principle of a guy stopping everything and, like, kind of, you know, everybody had, like, just all about comfort. Like, for the one guy, he just wanted to get to the game. Mm-hmm. Everybody just wanted to go home. And yet, for that guy, the idea that somebody was going to be, like, possibly wrongfully accused, not get justice was, like, too much, you know? And, like, just thinking about that sense of idealism in that film and, like, man, we really need a little of that today. Like, where did that sense of
and that I think being that
patriotic,
one is,
like, that sense of patriotism, where did that go?
That one's important, too, because it's not an absolute guilt or innocence question. Right. What they're saying is it's too much of a risk. It's worse to convict somebody who is innocent than it is to let somebody who's guilty go.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, I think there's, man, I'm not going to try to remember exactly. There's, like, a flowery legal saying around that like, yeah, the worst, that's
far worse.
You could have 100 people go free. If you have one person who's incarcerated who's innocent, that ruins the whole thing,
right?
And just thinking about how far we are from, seriously, that sentiment, especially, like, considering the boy in question was this young Puerto Rican kid. You imagine, like, what does that movie look like now if directed by Michael Bay or Mel Gibson or something?
It was symbolism.
We haven't heard a lot out of Mel Gibson lately, huh?
Thank God.
So, my number four, going off of your main, what is it called?
Main Justice. Yes.
So,
a lot of love.
There was an IFC sketch comedy show called The Birthday Boys, which was kind of like the spiritual successor to Mr. Show. Bob Odenkirk was actually in. Like, he met up with a sketch comedy group and he helped produce the show, and he was in, I think, if not all of the episodes, at least all of the episodes in the first season. And they did a sketch where it was like a Southern Louisiana court. But instead of actually talking about the trial, they just talked about how hot it was. So I'm going to play just a clip of
doing the show now.
This is the end of.
This was it. After 3 long days of testimony, with witness after witness claiming I'd killed my beloved Ruthie Mae, it seemed my trial had reached its boiling point.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I believe it's quite clear to us all that we have reached a stalemate here today. Now, it is not because of contradictory testimony. No, that ain't it. And it is not because of a lack of evidence. Heck, we got a melon of the stuff. But it is because of the fact that this here courtroom is too damn sweaty.
The sweaty courtroom.
We are trying to uphold the law, and every time we try to speak,
We got to deal with the sticking and the salting, the dripping and the beating, the slipping and the sliding, the swishing and the swashing.
Where are you going with this?
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call your attention to the thermometer on the wall. Mr. Pepperwater, can you see the thermometer that I'm speaking of?
I can, yes.
Well, that's real good.
Would you mind reading it for us?
104 degrees!
104 Fahrenheit degrees!
So it goes on where, like, the counter-argument is how everyone in the courtroom is wearing hot clothing, and then the stenographer... He's like, no, I know this is unusual, but I need to point out that we all had hot food for lunch. Even you yourself, Your Honor, I saw you eating a chili that was not one, not two, not three, not four, but five alarms. And then at the end, they sentence the guy to death.
Nice.
Kyle, what is your number three?
Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, was the game I was talking about earlier, and his catchphrase is he just yells objection and like points like all the time, like that's what he does.
You know, when you can't pound the law, you pound the table.
Objection. My number three is just a scene from Primal Fear where Ed Norton's character like transforms, and it's
the best sarcastic slow clap in all the film.
It's so like. He's great in that movie.
Yeah, he really was.
Hey, Ed Norton.
Yeah, like, speaking of people that, like, kind of disappeared, like, what is he doing now?
He did a movie called Motherless Brooklyn that he wrote and directed last year. Starred in and directed.
Did he get angry with the production team and take over the screenwriting himself?
Is he known for doing that?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him pull it off in his own movie.
Oh, man.
I didn't see it. The trailer for it did not look good.
But, yeah, just a young Ed Norton being creepy. And
was that his
weird.
First film?
I was going to say, I think that's his first
film.
I think it was.
It.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was the first big one.
But yeah, he was awesome in that. Richard Gere, and I forget who the other
man
that
Richard
was.
Gere.
But yeah, great movie. Lots of courtroom scenes, but which I think my thing with courtroom scenes is I kind of tend to tune out when it gets like real complex and, and like too much like paperwork and stuff, but I remember that one just not being too realistic, I think, and maybe that's why I enjoyed it. But yeah, it was an awesome movie, Primal Fear.
Yeah, that was his film debut.
Wow.
He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
And he wasn't like a kid though. Like he was
pretty young.
A teenager, but he wasn't like, I don't know.
He's not like a child.
Drew Barrymore.
Not like Brad Renfro in The Client or anything.
Yeah.
Was it The Client? With Susan Sarandon?
I think so, yeah. It's a bad movie.
Totally. He was 22.
Eva would be your number three. I was like, technical times.
I love that. I love that part at the end. It's the best. It's the best use of the slow clap.
Yeah, that was real creepy.
I had Primal Fear saved for later, but I'll just do it now.
Yeah, sweet.
I love the idea that both Primal Fear and Jagged Edge have these defense attorneys who are very, they believe that they're doing the right thing, that they're, you know, that they're there to keep an innocent person from being convicted, and that, you know, that they have this conflict of, well, how do you defend somebody that you know did it? And your point is, well, I don't know that they did it. You know, I'm doing the right thing by them. And I love that both of those movies has somebody like going too far to protect somebody that they shouldn't be protecting.
Who is Richard Gere going against in that trial? It was
Laura Linney.
Yeah, it was like someone else that was pretty big. Yeah,
yeah, Laura Linney and
oh yeah, she's the one that gets like
he attacks her.
Yeah.
Oh. And he like goads him into it. You know, he does it to and is Frances McDormand in that too? She's like the psychiatrist or something.
Yeah. Because they keep cutting to her in the courtroom scene when she's like grilling him.
Yeah, because she's the one who's kind of diagnosed him with
the bipolar or whatever.
And multiple personalities is usually what it's like dissociative identity disorder or something.
Yeah,
it's a fun one.
Yeah, it's cool.
So what's your number three?
So my number three is a show that I recently found out about. It was pretty shocking. Called Tales of Tomorrow.
Ah, yes.
And this was a 50s era
Like 1951, so, 52, like early,
yeah,
early
it actually, TV. Yeah, so 1951, so like the earliest TV we could think of almost, and it's an anthology series about like the strange and the paranormal. There's science fiction, there's like fantasy. The idea for it came from this guy, Theodore Sturgeon, Mort Abrams, and they kind of, the original title was Tomorrow Is Yours. They struck a deal with a bunch of producers and a bunch of writers to have like, they had access to like this huge crop of short stories that a bunch of authors had written. So if it was the first time, for example, like Arthur C. Clarke had any of his work adapted into television. Hmm. What was notable about it is the first one I watched was actually called the Duplicates. And it's essentially like a reverse of the Twilight Zone's episode Mirror Image with the doppelgangers, almost like from their point of view. And it's this doppelganger who's like sent to Earth to try to take out the sky. In any case, like, it was so far ahead of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Like, so many of the episodes, like, I ended up watching. And the very first episode is called A Verdict from Space. And that's why it's in this Corbin episode. And it begins with this guy, like, he's on trial for killing this scientist. I'm going to spoil this thing.
Spoiler alert for an almost for a 70-year-old TV show.
For a show that could have an A.
So if you're listening to this from outer space and you are just receiving TV signals from 1951.
Like, you have the opportunity to watch this because it's mostly in the public domain. So it's on YouTube. And the episode starts with the guy, like, he's on trial for murdering this scientist. And he tries to say, oh, no, I didn't do it. And scientists are trying to tell us something we just discovered. Essentially, it gets to the end and he's about to be convicted of murder, and what he was trying to tell them, that the scientist was trying to warn him there's an impending invasion, alien invasion, and it like happens right as he's about to get pronounced guilty. And it's just this like really, like the episode, if you guys watch it, it kind of sucks because it takes like 25 minutes to get up to that one cool point, and in that 25 minutes you have no idea what's going on. Like, it's really weird. It was the first science fiction television show made for adults, and one thing they seem to try to do is put in a lot of like real world scientific concepts, so it's really hard science, almost kind of like The Outer Limits, and it's boring. Like, it's like hard, like really not well explained science. Like,
but these are people this. Who would have read Popular Science and Popular Mechanics as kids and as teenagers, and they would have been more tuned, like, into it.
It was just it's a really interesting series, and to come so far ahead of the Twilight Zone I thought was like really significant. I don't think it takes anything away from TZ necessarily, yet I have to say that, you know, TZ being seen as this like completely groundbreaking show,
it's not as much of a vanguard as we thought it might be. It still is in some ways.
Yeah. So yeah, Tales from Tomorrow. Listeners, check it out. Nick, what's your number three?
Cool. My number three is from a movie called Malice, in which Alec Baldwin plays a surgeon.
Ah, yes.
Who's getting sued. And he makes this speech. He's being accused of malpractice. And during the speech, or during the deposition, somebody accuses him of having a God complex, and I'll cut to the end of it. He says, so I ask you, he's saying this to the prosecutor. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or that their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or that their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from postoperative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church, and with any luck, you might win the annual raffle. But if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God. Which is a great speech. It really nails a lot of the, yes, God complex that a lot of professionals have, especially medical professionals, and I won't get into more specifics.
It's something you've mentioned before in passing.
Well, yeah, and it's the thing that, I like that you said professionals, because it is a thing that is pervasive within our culture. Mm-hmm. This idea of elite
ability,
standing, and the idea that somehow gives you like the right to do things and say things to other people like that you shouldn't.
Yeah,
it's really, it is something that I think like post I mentioned monarchies earlier, post-monarchical societies, we've had this rise of like that kind of elitism.
Two other things. One, if you take him metaphorically, he isn't wrong.
What you're praying for is for your loved one to have somebody who can take care of them.
Yeah, what he is doing, granted, this whole thing has a thing, like a weird, he says he's board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery, but he's getting sued over an ovarian thing, which is like, he probably shouldn't have been doing in that case. But that is
ovarian thing? Are you talking about like a baby?
No, it was he removed an ovary that he thought was torsed, mm-hmm. or something like that, and it wasn't neither of the things that he should have been doing.
Yeah,
he's a cardiothoracic surgeon.
But he's also wrong about like praying to anything is a
exactly.
That's not gonna make a difference whether you praise to him or
but his point of like being totally responsible in that moment, like he's the one who's responsible for somebody's well-being or you know possible death, is
not
true.
Totally inaccurate.
Yeah, he's not wrong, he's just an asshole.
Right.
But the main reason that I picked this actually is because there's an episode of 30 Rock in which Alec Baldwin, who played the surgeon in this case, as Jack Donaghy, is going to confession for the first time in a very long time because his girlfriend forces him to. And he's saying all these things to the priest that he's done in his life. And one of them is, what he says, one time during a deposition, I claimed that I was God. Nice. So it's just
that's awesome.
An impact, like, glossed over. They just say that and move on. Call back to this movie, I think is really funny.
It's a great show for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It snuck a lot of things in. Oh my God. The thing about Bill Cosby.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, there's Weinstein jokes too.
Yeah.
There's a couple Weinstein jokes in that show from, 10 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. Kyle, what is your number two?
My number two is just majority of The Social Network.
Very good. That means I don't have to bring it up.
Yeah, but with the scenes that stood out the most was the "Do I have your full attention?"
Yeah.
Scene was so
it's the best
awesome.
Line.
Incredible writing by Aaron Sorkin, mm-hmm. and Jesse Eisenberg is just like when I first watched it, that scene didn't really stand out to me. But then like rewatching it, you're just like, man, it's a really like well acted scene where he's saying that you don't have my full attention, you have the minimum, and it was really powerful. And like the editing and the music that happens because he's like looking right at the twins while he's saying it, and mm-hmm. like it's real intense despite it just being them sitting at a table, and it's really cool.
Yeah. The writing and that script is just
it's it has to be to make like that type of movie work, because like they keep cutting from like present day I guess the past and these courtroom mm-hmm. talks, but it's never like dull. It's interesting and informative, and it's really well done.
Yeah, and like you said, the score is incredible. And we didn't mention this when we talked about Watchmen, but the score is by the same guys, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Hmm. Yeah,
and man, they can.
Everything they do is great.
They can score.
And what's crazy is, at least with the Social Network, it's like there's not like a theme. It's just like a feeling mm-hmm. of the music. There's not like a thing you can hum, but it's tense. A Social Network is awesome. I almost forgot that was even an example, because it's not like there's not like a jury or trial or anything.
Yeah, it doesn't feel laborious.
Yeah, they're just it's like a hearing. I don't know what like they call it technically.
Yeah, it's a deposition or something.
But
like
yeah,
that. I'm not a lawyer.
It's
not
it's
one of your big fancy awesome. Lawyers.
Fancy law talking guy.
Eva, would be your number two.
It's an episode of The Golden Girls called "It's a Miserable Life," and this is a thing that used to come up on TV shows when we were kids and before when we were kids, where there's a tree that's going to be torn down. And everybody on the block wants to save the tree, so they're going to like city council meetings and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And except for the mean old lady who lives in the house that the tree is on her property. And there's a point that Betty White's character Rose is talking, and the mean old lady like stands up and starts to like say, you know, who cares, concrete's cleaner, and she's saying all these horrible things about all them, and Betty White turns and says, you know what, she's like, this is my chance to talk, and if you don't like it, you can sit down or you can just drop dead. So of course she drops dead. And they find out that she has no family, she has no one to claim her body, that she's going to be cremated and put in like a potter's field somewhere, and she feels guilty, so she takes the ashes. But then she finds a magical loophole to save the tree by scattering her ashes around the tree and saying that it's a grave and that they can't tear the tree down.
Eat shit, lady.
Right.
Man.
They got her twice.
I was just thinking
Betty White, man. Our
local, we had a tree dispute in Highland Square. Do you guys remember that? The Highland Square tree dispute. Oh my god.
There's a significant tree there?
There was
not anymore.
One. Yeah. And boy, I'm not gonna name names because yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. One of my friends was threatened, like their life was threatened.
It was over intense. A tree?
Yeah, over a tree.
Under the tree, actually.
It was intense. Yeah. And it was that same kind of like, you know, we have people threatening to chain themselves to it, all kinds of stuff. It's just like, wow, stuff got really intense.
Who threatened him?
I can't say a layer. It's a business
owner. You can write it down and pass it over like in a courtroom.
Yeah, it's a prominent business owner. I can't say a layer. He's an asshole, though.
Sir, what's your number two?
Nice.
So my number two is, man, this one's hard because I'm having a log jam. Well, I'm gonna go with Twilight Zone Obsolete Man for my number two. I just think like it's one of my favorite Twilight Zone like episodes, and it's just so cool like how I think what it says about like fascism and totalitarian states is like one of the most like clear and just cutting, you know. It gets to the fact that like really what they're after is destroying like knowledge and like history, and just the idea that this guy is like called in front of them, in front of the state, like so everybody can see that, you know, that's another really historical example, like that's how states use oppression, is to make examples of people. And then of course the way it's turned around is like one of my favorite Twilight Zone moments. Do you guys know the episode I'm talking about, by the way? Yep. Obsolete Man.
Obsolete. He's a librarian, isn't he?
He's a librarian, and it's essentially like a Big Brother style government, and he's on trial because he's been basically
getting rid of him.
Yeah, and they're kind of doing this to a lot of types of people. Like they put him through this like public trial where they decide that they're no longer necessary, and then they're actually like sentenced to death. Yet they can choose how they die, and he chooses to be locked in a room with a party official, and like he's supposed to, like, I think the party official is supposed to kill him. Is that it?
I don't remember. Exactly
yet. And all, you know, essentially he like traps, hides a bomb in there, and that's not even spoiling it. So yeah, listeners, check it out. Obsolete Man is just wonderful. Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is a movie from the early 80s, I think 1980 or 81, called Breaker Morant, who, Breaker Morant was the nickname of a real life Australian lieutenant who fought in the Boer War. And he was accused of, well, he did murder prisoners of war, and he was put to trial and executed over it. But in Australia, he almost gained like a folk hero status because the trial was, you know, he did these things, but the trial was incredibly unfair, or at least it was perceived to be unfair. So the movie is about him and two other lieutenants who are on trial for shooting these prisoners of war. And they were basically made as like wartime scapegoats because supposedly they were under orders to shoot the prisoners. And, you know, it's an interesting movie because what they did, we know what they did. We know that they did it. And we know that it was wrong that they did it. So it's not really about that morality. It's about the morality of, is this a fair trial? Because they're not on trial by their own nation. They're on trial by the Brits. And, you know, they pulled the trigger, but were they really the ones responsible? So there's a speech at the end, in which the defense attorney for them says, "The fact of the matter is that war changes men's natures. The barbarities of war are seldom committed by abnormal men. The tragedy of war is that these horrors are committed by normal men in abnormal situations. Situations in which the ebb and flow of everyday life have departed and have been replaced by a constant round of fear and anger, blood and death." So it's just an interesting... It's a really interesting movie. It's compelling. They do a lot of like cross-cutting between their trial and what actually... like the events that unfolded. But I think it is an interesting movie because we know what happened and we know what happened was wrong, and yet you still see that there's a lot of complexities to it.
Yeah, there's still a desire to... and
like desire for fairness. Yeah. Like,
add that.
Yeah, regardless of what they did, they should have due process the same way anyone else would, instead of... it was kind of like a sham trial, basically. Or at least how the movie depicts it and how it's perceived.
Is it an Australian movie?
Yeah. Kyle, what is your number one?
My number one is actually from a series that I just finished up like a week or two ago. It's the Netflix series, Conversations with the Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes. Really interesting documentary series. It's like 4 episodes long. But at one point, he's defending himself in court, and he is cross-examining an officer that was the first to show up to one of his murder crime scenes, and he keeps just making the officer go into gruesome detail about what he saw and like the positions of all the bodies, and it's like such an eerie and like messed up thing. And hearing the interviews of the all the people in the courtroom, and some of the jurors, and saying like how it was like really gratuitous, and knowing that he was responsible for it, it's like really messed up. Mm-hmm. And it was the fact that this was all on tape, and you could see like the look in his eyes when he was like asking the guy, and the guy was describing it, and it's almost like he was like savoring his own kill, and it was really dark and messed up. But yeah, that is my number one. Ted Bundy, man, what a weird...
what a dick.
Weird is one way to describe it.
It was nuts. Like,
he's a quirky guy.
What was kind of crazy about that whole series was...
he's just misunderstood.
I knew
so charming.
I knew nothing about anything that like went on.
Really?
Like, I knew he wasn't...
you knew he was a serial killer.
Yeah. But like, I didn't know like his escapes and that he like defended himself. That his like,
he proposed
death,
to his
death row baby. Like,
yeah, ugh,
it's crazy. What a... like, I don't know. Nuts. But yeah, that's my number one. Eva, would be your number one?
My Cousin Vinny.
Nice.
My Cousin Vinny has the end of My Cousin Vinny, when he, you know, puts his fiance on the stand and gets her to say that the defense theory of the case is wrong, but then explains why it's wrong in a way that actually proves his innocence. It's just beautiful. Like, that was the amount of knowledge I aspired to have about something as a kid, was Mona Lisa's car expertise. And there was a review that I read of The Irishman where they talked about that The Irishman is going to be one of the last films that talks about Italian Americans as being immigrants, that they were still like a distinct culture from white America. In a way. And I think My Cousin Vinny is another one that like talks about the fact that because he got arrested, and where are they? Alabama, Mississippi?
Yeah, they're somewhere in the South.
Somewhere in the South. I think it's Alabama. And they're Italians, Catholics. Like, they're in trouble and they're not going to be treated fairly. Mm-hmm. And he's not exactly, you know, the judge isn't the most generous with him. But oh, it's a good time.
I haven't seen it in forever, but it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. It's Joe Pesci.
JP.
I haven't actually seen it.
Really?
Really?
Mm-mm.
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's a fun one. Marissa Tomei, didn't she win an Oscar for that?
I know she was nominated. I don't know. She might have won.
I think she won.
Ralph Macchio is...
The Match.
Yeah.
The Match.
It's got Fred Gwynne as the judge.
Yeah, she won.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a good... He would. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, he does a good... well, you know, the accents are similar. Maine and...
Yeah.
But he does a good... Like, bewildered judge. What's your number one, sir?
Well, my runner-up is... It's only my runner-up because it's... I mean, it's kind of involved in the next week's episode. It's the mock trial of Fred Hampton. So, Fred Hampton was a Black Panther from Chicago in the 60s. Who was... kind of like lauded by a lot of his contemporaries and like kind of by other activists from around the world and different leaders as being one of the ones in that group that they thought would really break out into national prominence, that just had a way of dealing with so many different kinds of people and really articulating the cause really well. He was on trial for some nonsense, like trumped up charges, and the Black Panthers held a mock trial for him, and it's available online. If you just type in Fred Hampton trial, you should be able to find it. It's from a film that I'll talk about a little bit more next episode. And my main pick is Better Call Saul, and it is the episode. So it would be season 3, episode 5, Chicanery, and it's the scene where Chuck breaks down in court. Have you seen Better Call Saul?
I've only seen the first couple seasons.
Okay, well, I'm spoiling this for you.
It's all right.
Yeah, I'm going to try not to. Essentially, like, there's been a whole, you know, basically Chuck's, the truth about what's going on with Chuck comes out of that moment, and it's very devastating. It's a scene that I actually remember as soon as I watched it. I just rewound it and watched it a couple more times. The acting in it is just amazing, and it's such a cool scene because it's, you know, Jimmy is manipulating the court. He's manipulating the way the trials work, witnesses, everything to get this result, and it's like the culmination of him as a con man and shady lawyer, which, like, Better Call Saul is one of my favorite shows because it combines two things I love. Lawyer shows and con man shows, and they're so, like, they're just the same, like,
only the outfits change.
It's, you know, so great. Foxy Boxing combines two of my favorite things. Boxing and referees.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, I love it. I love that show, and it was such a great moment, especially like in a show that has a lot of humor and a lot of like absurdity. That moment is some of the best, just pure tragic drama I think I've seen on television in like years.
Yeah, it's, I need like, to catch really up with it. I liked the show.
I liked it every time I've watched it.
Yeah.
I just haven't really like it's gone long. All the way into it.
I realized
is Chuck like, the I Michael mean, McKean character.
Yeah.
Okay. Because yeah. I did get a little like exhausted with him.
It comes to such a close and such a head there that like it almost makes it kind of worth it.
Okay.
So yeah. Listeners, check that out. Nick, what's your number uno?
My number one is when Omar Little goes on the stand in The Wire. Mm-hmm. First of all, he wears the tie and he just like kind of ties it. Like he doesn't tie it like a tie. He doesn't do a Windsor. He just kind of loops it around itself. And he's getting grilled by Maury Levy, like the Barksdale
shady lawyer.
Yeah, the shady lawyer that the Barksdale organization has. He's like their attorney on retainer. And Omar's getting grilled by him. And he's like, oh, all you do is you rob drug dealers. You're just like scum who's feeding off of the criminal element of Baltimore. And Omar just goes, so are you. Like, I've got a gun, you've got a briefcase. We're doing the same thing, just in different ways. And it's the most crushed you've ever seen anyone in their life.
Yeah.
Just get destroyed that fully. And it's so funny because Omar's like, you know.
Right.
He's
absolutely right.
He's absolutely right. And he's so unprofessional seeming during his like when he's on the stand, he talks about like shooting somebody in the butt so they wouldn't be able to sit down anymore. And then he says that, and it perfectly sums up everything you need to know about this character. He's Omar, but without a gun. He's just using their money in the courtroom. And it's, man,
that show. Yeah, even like the mercenary aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
That show's a delight.
It really is. You see his new show?
David Simon's new
show? Yeah.
The Deuce?
The Plot Against America.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it's based on this, oh man, it must have been like early 2000s, a movie or a novel came out about, it's an alternate history where Charles Lindbergh becomes president and leads the country into like fascism immediately.
Mm. No.
So yeah, I mean, you know, nothing to do with what's happening now or anything. Just totally unrelated. Just felt like
pure fantasy. Yeah.
So those are our top five courtroom antics scenes. We do have a game. That's divided into different rounds. So I think we might just spread this out over a couple episodes. So we talked about doing this trope on the show, and we're probably not going to do it as a trope, or maybe we will in the future, but the trope is X meets Y, and it's just describing something as...
where it's just like, this movie is like this meets, like this, yeah. And this, yeah. Combined.
Yeah. Like, Yorgos Lanthimos apparently said that Uncut Gems is like Robert Altman dipped in acid or something like that, or taking acid or something. So it's one of those kinds of things where it's like this meets this and it ends up this. So this is from
acid sucks.
This is from this is from John Ducker. This is round one, and this is called Peace Meets Cake.
As cool. In like, are they all like,
I think this
food
is
related?
This is like, no, I think it's like this is a piece of cake.
Oh.
So, number one, Pinocchio meets Blade Runner. That's got to be AI, right? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So these are actual films. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they John Ducker's own estimations of the things, or are they like actually things people have said? Or
no, it's probably, I think these are his clues.
Doesn't he's not referencing anyone? So.
Yeah.
2001 A Space Odyssey meets Hellraiser.
Event Horizon,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
that's awesome.
Reviewed on this very show, week's episode. Take a gander with your ears, whatever that's called. Number three, Fast and the Furious meets James Bond.
XXX.
Yep. Superman meets Big. That would be Shazam.
Yeah.
Superman meets The Omen.
The kid. The Prodigy,
the Brightburn.
Number six, Ocean's 11 meets The Prestige.
Oh, is that not that?
Oh, the now you see me.
Oh, Now You See Me. I was thinking 21 for some reason.
Now You See Me.
Yeah.
Number seven, Three Amigos meets Star Trek.
Oh, Galaxy Quest.
Love Galaxy Quest. That's it. Number eight, Godzilla meets The Blair Witch Project. Cloverfield,
yeah. God, that movie sucks. The sequel, though.
Sequel.
Wow. Wait.
Which sequel?
Not 10.
Well, he's talking about the John Goodman one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Awesome. Have you seen the Netflix?
Great. No.
Not great?
It's horrible. It is.
No way.
That dropped after the Super Bowl.
Was it last year?
Yeah.
Was it only last year or the year before?
Maybe 2 years?
It was a couple years ago, but yeah, it was.
So weird. What a weird decision. And like,
yeah.
Well, it's because
they had to bury it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Three Amigos meets Apocalypse Now.
Hot Shots?
No, I was wrong. I got it wrong. Try to give you guys.
Oh, Deer Hunter? No.
No, it's a it's a comedy. With
Tropic Thunder?
Yeah. Trying to give a clue about maybe the last time somebody was nominated for an Oscar for doing blackface.
Yeah.
Number 10, Godzilla meets Gundam. I don't know what Gundam is. That's, like,
what's it called? The Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, yeah. Pacific Rim.
Yeah, they're like giant robots.
Okay, basically. I was going to say it.
But Gundam, I think they're like vehicles, though. They're not like robots. But yeah.
I think, yeah.
Well, that's why Godzilla meets it.
Yeah, that's why
you need the Godzilla part.
Taxi Driver meets The King of Comedy meets Gotham.
Yawn.
You know what one of my Letterboxd reviews for this movie was?
No, because I'm the only one who looks at you on Letterboxd.
Taxi Drivel.
Yeah.
That's I saw you arguing on Facebook with people.
Like, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was awesome.
Why do people think this movie's good?
I don't know.
Just like some of the things that I knew would be bad, and some of the things that you described to me about it, and just the memes that I'm seeing, I'm like, there's a scene where he's talking on national television to an audience.
Mm-hmm. That's the climax of the movie.
Oh, so you haven't seen it yet?
Oh, wait.
I feel like your use of yet implies that there will be a point where the answer to the question is yes.
I can't even imagine that. Like, that's getting an Oscar.
Several.
Probably a few.
Yeah. It's definitely going to win him best actor. So he will be...
Hope you're happy, America.
People who have played the Joker in the last 12 years will have as many Oscars as Asian men over the last... All of them. Yeah.
100 oh my God. 101 years.
Wow.
Number 12. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets the Stepford Wives.
Get out.
X-Men meets Unforgiven, Logan. And Silence of the Lambs meets Aliens.
The thing? No.
Silence of the Lambs.
Man, these are all like...
Yeah,
what? That curveball.
Killer. Meets Aliens.
What? Well...
Pitch Black. I've never seen it.
It's good, actually. And I guess...
Isn't that the Vincent Diesel?
Yeah,
it's a prequel to
Vincenzo Diesel.
Vincenzo Diesel.
Is that a prequel to Riddick?
I think it's the. I think Riddick might be a prequel to that. The one where he's like on his own planet is, I think, the prequel. I don't know. It's
do you guys know what Vin Diesel's real name is?
Vincenzo.
It's Mark Sinclair.
What an awesome name he chose for himself. It's like Max Power.
Yeah. We got three more rounds. Do we want to dive into another one or save it?
No, we'll
all right, we'll save it. Yeah. All right. Thank you, John Docker for the game. JDMF for the game.
Yeah.
Whatever. You can find us on the internet at facebook.com/onthetropes. You can rate and review us on iTunes or wherever it is you found this. That'd be cool. You can get some loot at Redbubble. No. onthetropes.redbubble.com is where you get the loot, and you can support us at patreon.com/onthetropes.
Nice.
I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
Eva.
And Kyle.
And we're talking docs next week.
Talking docs.
Doc talking.
Doctors.